This is Coast to Coast AM with Ian Punnett, in for George Norrie. So George has a night off, well earned. So good evening, Mr. and Mrs. Middle America and all the ships at sea, and to the hostile alien armies hovering silently behind their cloaking devices just outside the Earth's atmosphere. Remember, eat the Canadians first. Much tastier, especially with hot sauce. Even with the kind that are supposed to kill you, like those ghost peppers and all the other ones. You know, we were going to do a show tonight on hot sauces. And obviously there was a time when Frank's or Tabasco was really considered like the hottest hot sauce. But nowadays, thanks to the craze that has millions of people putting the hottest sauces that humans can tolerate, literally sauces that make one's face go numb, like the dragon's breath pepper, or difficult to breathe, or even die, everything imaginable, people are putting hot sauces on. So old hot sauces like Cholula and Sriracha are now just kind of spicy ketchups, right? So that's what we were going to talk about. We were going to have some fun on the topic of hot sauces, like that Black Mamba that is said to have a strength of 6 million Scoville units. We will have that talk someday, but a family emergency prevented our expert guest from being here. We hope for good news on his return. And his prayers are with us, whatever it was. But a lot of that information didn't get conveyed, so you may just have been turning to the show for that tonight and then not hearing it. I think it may have still even been up on the website a little while ago. We do have some good news, though, on somebody who will be filling in for us tonight, and we'll get to that in a second. And we have some good news, too, on somebody in the Coast to Coast family, engineer Kevin Block, who keeps things running for our Coast to Coast affiliate, K-Man, in Manhattan, Kansas, where I will be moving later this year to begin teaching at K-State. Speedy recovery, my man. While I'm at it, I'll give a shout-out to my Kansas realtor, Cameron Ward, and my new friends, Trevor and Tammy. So I was just there last weekend getting to know the place. It's going to be fun. I don't leave until later on this year, so I hope for many more fun shows ahead on Coast to Coast. We'll start with this one. And tomorrow night's show, too. For a show about the truth behind the Salem witch trials. But tonight, Coast to Coast security and privacy expert Lauren Weinstein is our replacement guest before we do open lines later on. And I wanted Lauren to come back on, even though I think he was just on about 80 minutes ago, because of this morning's revelation that the FBI has cyber boxes full of tapes recorded by Donald Trump's personal attorney, the fixer, Michael Cohen. Now, what those recordings mean for the president is a question that will be answered in the weeks ahead. What all this secret recording means for you, that will be answered tonight on Coast to Coast AM. In for George Norrie, this is Ian Punnett. Well, again, Denver Nix, a regular contributor to Time and National Geographic Traveler, wrote this great book on hot sauces, including the most dangerous kind. He could not make it here tonight. We will reschedule. But before Lauren Weinstein joins us a little bit later on, we have time for a little crypto news and a story that I want to tell you to kind of set up a bit of the conversation with Lauren. That Egyptian sarcophagus you've been hearing about on Coast to Coast was cracked open, and surprise, it smelled like somebody died in there. Actually, three people, to be more accurate. Unsure of what they would find, Egypt's Ministry of Antiquities had appointed a committee of archaeologists to open the relic, which was unearthed at a construction site. According to Egyptian news outlet Al Watan, which is Arabic for the homeland, I believe, they initially lifted the lid off the tomb by just 2 inches before a pungent smell so revolting forced them to evacuate the premises entirely. After they were better prepared, the scientists later pried it open with the help of Egyptian military engineers. Quote, we found the bones of 3 people in what looks like a family burial. Unfortunately, the mummies inside were not in the best condition, and only the bones remain. That, according to the Secretary General of the Supreme Council of Antiquities. Now, addressing media fears that disturbing the tomb could trigger a Pharaoh's curse, the man declared, quote, "We opened it, and thank God the world has not fallen into darkness." Well, not yet, anyway. I was the first to put my whole head inside the sarcophagus, the man said, and here I stand before you. I am fine. Hashtag famous last words, but whatever. May it always be so. I'm not wishing any harm on him. There is a photo of the three skeletons and that red, brown sewage water, this broth that they were in, from El Watan on the coasttocoastam.com website. Take a look. By the way, in response to that story, Red's Planet tweeted out a mysterious liquid in an ancient sarcophagus. Ian Punnett is doing a Coast to Coast AM show tonight on hot sauce. And we all know that George Norrie doesn't believe in coincidence. I don't think anybody's tasting that anytime soon. Ugh. Although, it wouldn't surprise me whether somebody starts using that for a label of some new sauce like sarcophagus or three ghost pepper sauce or let my pupils go or something. Who knows? We'll just wait. But anyway, by the way, too, James also wrote to me at Twitter. You can always follow me on Twitter at Deacon Punnett. Just to let you know, he said the store with the largest selections of hot sauces is Julio's Liquors in Shrewsbury, Massachusetts. He says, I'm from Lake Charles, Louisiana. We use Tabasco or Crystal. But I went actually to that place, Julio's Liquors website. Son of a gun. They got like shelves and shelves of all these great hot sauces. And I've been to a couple of restaurants that have had that. It's kind of fun to try, but be careful when you do. The authenticity of the Shroud of Turin is being called into question once again via a forensic study that suggests that the image contained on the cloth is a fabrication. The controversial piece of linen, many people believe to be the burial cloth of Jesus Christ, has been the subject of unending debate, stretching back centuries. I'm on the record as saying I'm not a Shroudy. I'm very much a person of faith, but I'm not a Shroudy. But this latest twist in the Turin saga comes courtesy of a newly published paper detailing a rather ingenious technique used to, quote unquote, test the image on the shroud, especially with regard to the blood. You can find out more if you go to coasttocoastam.com. It turns out it's Texas Pete hot sauce, by the way, on the shroud. I don't know what it is. Anyway, an odd video circulating online shows a strange object hovering in the sky over Mexico. Could it be humanoid? Could it be a witch? Hang on to that thought for a moment. The weird footage was purportedly filmed in the Mexican state of Jalisco earlier this week. Little is known. You can go see the video for yourself on our website. Sad story, by the way. A cardiologist who treated former President George Herbert Walker Bush was killed Friday in a bicycle-to-bicycle drive-by shooting near the hospital where he works. Investigators don't know if the shooting was targeted, random, or caused by road rage. But that would be a first, right? Like bicycle road rage? I was trying to think if that ever happened before. Did you hear about this? It's from the Daily Mail. A bizarre conspiracy theory has emerged suggesting that celebrities seen sporting a black eye are part of the Illuminati. Elizabeth Hurley, Boy George, Robert Downey Jr. are among the famous celebrities who've been photographed with bruising in their left eye area in recent years. Including George W. Bush, along with the Pope, Prince Philip, Prince Andrew. All of these have been photographed with black eyes. And according to some, the black eye, the left one, is part of a cult or, quote, Illuminati high-level initiation ritual during which the pledger is said to be forced to, quote, eat pain in a quest to become more powerful. That is exactly what our high school football coach used to say to us. But author and internet radio show host Sherry Schreiner, who I would have loved to have had on the show, wrote the book Interview with the Devil, in which he claimed to converse with Lucifer, has spoken of the link between the black eyes and what's called soul scalping. According to Schreiner, government leaders, people on TV with their own shows, and hundreds of other entertainers have sold their souls to Satan. Quote, you cannot be on TV right now without signing on the dotted line. The bizarre recurrence of facial bruises on Illuminati politicians and entertainers has resulted in the speculation that their souls have been replaced in a satanic ritual called soul scalping. Now, like I said, I wanted to have her on the air, but she died a few years ago, and that's not going to happen. But if anybody knows anything more about that, I'd entertain a, you know, a tweet. If you've got a link, let me know. Or, you know, if I haven't linked up new people at Facebook either for a while, but either way, at Deacon Punnett will get you there on Twitter, and I'd love to hear from you. There's a few black guys in both parties in Washington, D.C. these days. Just like Bill Clinton before him, President Trump is fond of saying that he's the victim of a witch hunt. And there were many witch hunts before 17th century Salem, Massachusetts, but none, I think, more commonly associated in the American imagination than Salem. But we might have been looking at the Salem witch trials all wrong. All this week, you know, it was really interesting. Well, every time I hear somebody talk about a witch hunt, I've been reading this book. It's by a guy named Tony Fells. The book is called Switching Sides: How a Generation of Historians Lost Sympathy for the Victims of the Salem Witch Hunt. And he makes the argument, and he will tomorrow night on Coast to Coast, that before anybody argues that they're the victim of a witch hunt, you should know what the witch hunts were really all about. And in fact, as you know, indicated by the title of the book, Switching Sides, it's entirely possible, but at the end of the show tomorrow night, you too will switch sides on where your sympathies should go in the Salem witch trials. It's very interesting. It's compelling material, first of its kind. And we'll get to that coming up tomorrow night on Coast to Coast, because what if there be witches? All right, so we'll get to Coast to Coast Internet and Privacy Advisor Lauren Weinstein in just a moment. We're going to talk about the ubiquity of all of these recording devices. You know, I walk around with a cell phone, and everybody else does too, that records hours worth of data. Video we can take very easily just using a phone. And I think there's not a day goes by, not an hour goes by, where there isn't a news story that involves somebody using a handheld device to record history in the making, like that very sad story from Branson, Missouri, about the duck boat going down, and there was somebody there to record it. But there's also lots of recording of, you know, police stops and other things that happen, and it's happening with such frequency that I thought it would be interesting to address the subject from this standpoint of how often are we being secretly recorded. And how often do you secretly record other people? Toward what purpose? And where's the line in privacy? So one of the reasons why I bring it up is because I, in fact, benefited from such a thing a couple years ago. Sometime right after I left Coast to Coast because of my tinnitus, I was just had become unbearable to do radio all these days of the week, and I just couldn't do it anymore. And I just had to learn how to handle my tinnitus before I could come back on and do a night like this. And that took years of therapy and practice to be able to do that. I still have to recover from every one of these shows, but it's not bad. Before that happened, I was involved. I had been against my will involved in a lawsuit. It wasn't against me, but it was with regard to an insurance promise that had been made, which suddenly that group decided not to fulfill. And it looked like it was heading to some sort of adjudication in a court. And you know what? You get into these situations, and I'm not going to get into any details, but there's a lot of gamesmanship that goes on at times like that. And I learned a lot about how insurance companies will sometimes have people that are, you know, doctors of some repute, but in an entirely different city, never having met a patient, just review a file and just say, oh, we won't pay that. And this isn't me. This is something you see in the news all the time, that they just simply refuse. And they force people to go to court and all this other stuff. Well, it was kind of a situation like that. And I'd been dotting my T's and right, dotting my T's. I've been crossing my T's and dotting my I's and doing everything I was supposed to do on this. And it came down to a time when I was called into a professional's office where I was expected to have a conversation with this professional, and the result of that conversation was going to be used in some form or fashion, you know, toward a court case. So I'll save the story for now, and we'll get back to it later on with Lauren. But I will tell you up front, if it hadn't been for the recording device on my phone, I would have been the victim of some sort of fraud. Recording things secretly sometimes may be just what you need to do and may need to do more of. Although you don't want to think about going through life like that, maybe that's where we are, that we just need to do that in order to protect ourselves. So hang on to that thought, and I'll return to it a little bit later on because Lauren Weinstein is with us, and it's always a pleasure, and it's been a few years. Lauren, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Yes, it's been way too long.
Yeah.
Very nice to talk to you again.
Have to pull you off the bench after you just sat down again from the other night. What were you on, Wednesday night or something?
Last night.
Last night.
No, I'm happy. I'm very, very happy. I'm always glad to be here, and this is a fascinating and important topic, of course.
I think it is, and I think this is something which, you know, we I don't know even I'm not sure what the whether you have any updated data on this, but how many times a day are we, just the average person, recorded in either an audio or video or both form? Do you know?
I've seen all kinds of numbers, and I suspect they're mostly just guesses. You know, it depends on where you live, of course, right? I mean, if you're in a rural area, you're going to tend to have lower numbers. If you're in a metropolitan area in many cities, you could be captured by hundreds or thousands of cameras a day.
Right.
Even just the municipal cameras, not to mention just getting caught in happenstance by people's cell phones and things like that.
That certainly was the proclamation today by the police who are looking into the story of that Houston cardiologist who was shot, and they're saying there are cameras up all over this area, and we've just begun to go through them, looking for images of the assailant and how they got away. And yet, to your point too, even more and more people with dashboard cameras who just to be driving by and end up recording something on a passive recording that they weren't even trying to record.
Yeah, that actually started outside the U.S. That was more popular. Now you're seeing a lot here. There was a bridge. Remember that bridge collapse recently? That terrible bridge collapse that was captured on several dash cams that were driving some that had just passed under the bridge.
Right.
Another aspect of this, of course, is that you also have all the cameras on law enforcement, the various police cameras, and that's turned into a gigantic can of worms in terms of what you can see, you know, when the public can have access to those videos, or if they can, to what extent they'll be blacked out for privacy purposes, because obviously police are going to people's homes. They see all kinds of very personal things that aren't necessarily
Right.
appropriate for the public to see. And it's become a city-by-city, state-by-state battle now, where the rules are completely different everywhere you go. There's no uniformity at all. So that's a whole nother layer
Yeah.
of this video surveillance, audio surveillance question.
And of course, then on top of that, they're the people who are recording the recorders. And that every time there's a police stop, which is also being recorded by theoretically dashboard cam and body cams, then there's also going to be, quite frequently, people standing on the side of the road recording the recorders.
Yeah, and one of the things that research is starting to show pretty clearly is that anyone who thought that the presence, for example, of police cameras was going to make it, you know, a slam dunk to figure out what's going on in any of these situations, that's just a wrong assumption, because every camera shows one point of view for one given period of time, and it can be very illuminating, or it can be very deceptive. And so often having multiple points of view is going to make the difference. But a whole new set of problems has come in. It's the usual thing, right? It's a typical tool. It has the positives, it has the negatives, and the question is, how is society going to balance those out?
Well, and I'll get to that, because that's the primary question. You know, you might be meeting with a doctor, you might be meeting with a lawyer, you might not. Where are the places where you might be recorded that you might have not anticipated? And on top of that, what are our rights when it comes to that? Could we wear a shirt, for example, that says you may not record me? Would that stop? Do we have any rights when it comes to that? We'll get back to that coming up in just a second. And to Lauren's point, you know, think about it. We have the Zapruder film, right? And it doesn't solve the issue of what happened that day in Dealey Plaza. But it started by the conversation that we were just having. We'll get back to this. Where are you in this new privacy war and the new levels that this is going to that we may just be hearing about for the first time on Coast to Coast AM? This is Ian Punnett. In for George Norrie tonight. And remember, too, George Norrie's TV show, as well as all the great archives, by the way, of Coast to Coast AM. But, I mean, you go online, it's hard to get away from George Norrie. And Beyond Belief right there for your fingertips. Or if you go to coasttocoastam.com, become a Coast Insider, you got all the George. Yeah, on a night when he's had a night off, you can still be highly fulfilled with more George Norrie. And he, if he were here, I'm sure he would do this update. Don't usually update stories during the show, but I thought this is compelling. If you've been following the story of the 17 victims of this duck boat sinking in Branson, Missouri, you might have been wondering how come none of them were wearing their vests. Well, it's just out now that the captain of this duck boat told them all not to put them on. At least according to one of the survivors, he said, "Don't worry about life jackets. You won't need them." And those were his last orders before the ship went down. Hate to think that any of us would have our last act on Earth something so egregious as an act of hubris like that. That the ego of saying, "I'll get us through. Don't do the safe thing." That would have been my first order to tell everybody to put their life vests on. It's not about my skills as a captain. It's about, you know, just how perilous a storm could be. But anyway, that's the latest if you've been wondering. All right. So if you're wondering about the other story that's been dominating news coverage today about Michael Cohen recording President Trump, you might be surprised how many times you're recorded during the day, and even by people that you'd never expect. I want to talk about that a little bit more right away with Lauren Weinstein, and then we'll get to your calls coming up at the top of the hour on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Well, as Lauren Weinstein, Coast to Coast AM security and internet advisor, said last half hour, there are no, like, uniform rules when it comes to privacy, especially state to state, city to city, certainly not country to country. But I think people are always surprised when somebody like an attorney would record a client. And yet that seemed to be what some of the conversation evolved around today with the release of that particular aspect of this story about President Trump. What are the rules about attorneys recording clients? Do you know?
As far as I know, you know, one of the things here is you're not just talking about laws. You're talking about, like, canons of professional ethics.
Sure.
And things like that may not have the, you know, force of law, but can involve whether or not you keep your law license and such. In general, and I was following this story like you know, most people today about Michael Cohen and the tapes, and of course all we heard about today was one tape, and
right,
we can assume there are lots more tapes, because if you have a habit of right, recording your clients, you probably, you know, are doing it on a fairly routine basis. It's certainly is a unethical kind of shading to it. It's one thing to inform a client that yeah, and I'm not a lawyer, so I'm not.
No. This is really this is key, though. Yeah.
But it's one thing to inform your client, "Look, I'm going to record this so that we have a record of this discussion," and the client says, "Fine." And it's another thing to just do it. And and the stories going around are saying that, that Cohen would sometimes just kind of play these tapes of Trump for other people and things like that, which also seems unethical.
Right.
Now the ethics of the recordings are different from the legality of the recordings. And as you suggested, there are no standard laws on this, and they vary widely here in the U.S. on a state-to-state basis. So,
that will come down to it's a one-party or a two-party state for recording, or you have to have the other person's permission. But there are some states, and I'm assuming New Jersey is one of them. I didn't check, but most of them are, where it's a one-party permission state, and only one of the two people has to know that there's a recording going on. That's to prevent somebody else from eavesdropping and recording a conversation in which they are not a participant.
Right. It's a different model when you have, say, somebody sitting who is not a party to the conversation. And of course, you could have more than two parties in a conversation. And so when we say
right.
two-party, that's sort of shorthand for all party.
That's
all,
perfect.
All,
exactly.
All parties
right.
that are participating in the conversation. That's different from somebody, whether it's law enforcement or somebody else, who is an external party, a third party, who is recording the conversation. That kind of thing will normally always require, a warrant of some sort or other a special legal justification. Now, when it comes to the individuals who are participating in the conversation, you're absolutely right. Most states are one-party states, and all that means is that if only one party to the conversation wants to record it, they just record it. They don't have to tell the other people they're doing it. From an ethical standpoint, they should.
Maybe they don't. And in one sense, here, let me make an argument for something on this. So in a one-party state, I think it's incumbent on us to find out, like, where we live and what the rules are. And maybe we are at a place in our culture, in the story arc of litigation in the United States, where one is wise to just assume, with all of the cell phone cameras and all of the, security cameras and microphones that exist everywhere, that nobody's seeking your permission, but you should just assume at every moment of every day you're being recorded and conduct yourself accordingly.
Yeah, I mean, you're probably pretty safe in your bathroom at home.
Right.
We hope.
Yep.
But once you go out the front door, there are cameras everywhere. There are security. People have security cameras pointed in all directions and everything else. The rules actually are somewhat different for video and audio. So that's one thing. We're talking about recording conversations. There can be differences when it comes to, like, video cameras where there's no audio being recorded. You brought up the situation of, could you put on a shirt, right, that said, don't record me? Would
that help?
Only in a multiple party state, in a two party state, because that might be reasonably construed as saying, no, I'm not giving permission. But if you're in a one party state, you don't have to give permission.
Right.
So the shirt would be meaningless, except as a fashion statement, perhaps.
All right. So let me extrapolate that a little bit more. Okay. Let me just pull on that a little bit. So if part of what I'm wondering about in this way in which we're starting to think about recording and being whether we're being recorded is whether or not we should also be more proactive about recording ourselves. And I give you as an example of that, both something that happened to me, which I'll get back to, but also when I was online today and I was going around, and I was reading some of the comments on about this story about Cohen and recording his clients, is I read somebody posting on a site said, I never go to my lawyer's office without recording him. And that I record every transaction that happens, especially when it comes to, and then I was like, dang, duh, when it comes to wills, when it comes to financial issues, is that, they're recording you when you call up to, the only one I know is Charles Schwab, they're recording you, but why not record them? Maybe that's our clue, is it's not a matter of there's too much recording. It's in order for us to really be protected, we're not doing enough recording. We got to protect ourselves.
I have actually done that myself here. Now, we're here in California. It's a two-party state. Whenever I've done that, I have informed the other party that I'm going to be making the recording and saying, if you continue this recording with me, I'm treating that as permission to go ahead. And they say, okay, go ahead, I give you permission. And I've done that with call centers, you know, where you get the recording that says, you know, for training purposes, right?
Yes. Right, yeah.
For training purposes, this call may be recorded or monitored, you know, to make our lawyers happy.
That's right.
And if there's a conversation that I feel I need a record of, I'll say, by the way, I'm informing you here that this conversation is being recorded. And if we continue it, this is considered to be a sent, just like your recording was to me. Exactly
right.
The same word. I try to use the same words that their recording used. And I mean, I've never had a problem with that. They've always said, fine, go ahead and record it. But in the context where you're making recordings without informing the other party and giving them a chance to say no or to leave the call at that point, then you're making a decision, and this is something I would recommend against, to make illegal recordings.
Right. You may not be able to use them anyway.
Yeah, I mean, they may make you feel better, and they may be useful to you in terms of personal recollections. But if you have some intention of using them in some legal context, and they're illicit recordings, they're not going to do you any good. These laws have been pretty well hashed out. I mean, there's a lot of confusion from state to state. But you will note the just ubiquitous nature of these preamble barkers that you hear on call centers that have all basically the same wording, you know, and
right.
They say this call may be recorded or monitored for this purpose or that purpose, because it has been determined that if you continue the call at that point, that's considered to be providing your consent. It's the same
passive
way
permission.
You call someone and leave a message on their voicemail. If you talk after the beep, you have given your consent. So consent doesn't necessarily mean that you absolutely come out and literally say, yes, I consent. Continuing the conversation when you have a reasonable knowledge that you're going to be recorded from that point is considered to be consent.
And yet, with California even being a two-party state, I'm willing to present to you a wrinkle. Across universities, colleges, high school campuses, it never used to be a thing to record a lecture. In fact, it used to be that professors would encourage the recording of a lecture, especially they would say, okay, record this. And I knew people that brought little cassette decks, right?
Yeah.
Set them up there, or they were in law school or whatever, and then transcribe this later on. And, you know, this was a big thing.
I remember when I was at UCLA, which is now a considerable number of years ago,
right?
There would be students who would have little portable cassette recorders, and they would put them on the table near the podium where the professor was and record them. And I don't remember many professors saying, don't do that.
But now you have the case where some of these recordings have been, for lack of a better term, weaponized, and something that a professor would say in a class to a student who didn't like that particular opinion then takes that recording and has been making, you know, trying to turn some professor into a national disgrace. And so they take a recording, maybe out of context, maybe not. So what this created was places where students were being told, no, you may not record my class, which becomes a whole nother thing. It's like, well, then I only get one shot to write it down. Yep. And so, I mean, I for one, when I teach, I just say, I have nothing to hide, so record away. I don't care. But I known other professors who said, I'm sick of it. And no, they're not allowed to record it because some students who are troublesome may go back and, you know, sort of cherry pick out some quotes and start making a big deal out of it. And that's just not worth it to them.
From a legal standpoint, I don't see an easy way out from under that, unless you're in a situation where the college or the university, whatever the educational institution is, has an overriding policy. I mean, it seems, this would be something I'd have to research, because now you're talking about layers of regulations and laws.
Sure.
And things. But if, for example, a university had a policy that said one of the conditions for teaching here, being a professor here, is that you allow your lectures to be recorded, and then the professor said, I don't want you to record, that would, from the legal standpoint of the state laws on recordings, the professor would be within his rights, but he would also be violating, in this case, the university rules which would allow the university presumably to take punitive action against that professor. So it can get kind of complicated.
I know of at least one school where the rule is you may not record a class without the professor's permission, explicit permission.
Yeah, and the way the laws are usually written, that would typically be an enforceable kind of rule.
Yeah.
At least in a two-party state. If you were in a one-party state, then it would be a more interesting question because if only one party has to give permission and the university says you may not do it, you're still in that one party scenario. So I don't know, you know, offhand, I think the exact circumstances would determine, but I think in a two-party state, it's a much clearer situation than in a one-party state.
That university of which I spoke is in a one-party state.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they just simply said, this is our policy, and as a student, you must adhere to our policies, and you may not record a professor without their permission.
In that case, you'd have a student who did not violate the state law, but had violated the rules of the university.
Right. So let me tell you a quick little story, and then I'd love to get your feedback on this. So I was involved in this sort of lawsuit at one point when... and it wasn't about me. I was okay, but I had to go in and speak with a professional, and I did. I met my scheduled period of time, but when I walked in, I got this really weird vibe from this guy, and it was he had his feet up on his desk. There was no receptionist. He, you know, motioned for me to sit down. I did, within earshot of him, and he was speaking very loudly. He was talking this big game about all the money he makes and what he was going to do and whatever. There was just sort of this weird, it just felt right away like this guy is all about money in a profession where he was not supposed to be all about money, and I won't go into it any deeper than that. So I had my cell phone, so I recorded it, and I'd recorded everything that happened. And he issued a report, which he was supposed to do based on our conversation, and it was nothing like what had happened. He had just, it was almost like he had pre-written the report before I got there that fit whatever it was that whoever hired him wanted him to say. And had I not recorded it, it would have been his, you know, credibility versus mine. It would have been his authority as a licensed professional versus mine. And I don't think I would have won it. And he submitted it in an affidavit, and I gave the attorney the copy of the audio, which they were flabbergasted. And so it was just a completely invalidated what this guy had said, and almost to a point of perjury where they could have proceeded with that. But I thought that was really interesting, and it was just this weird little angel voice, you know, that just said, record this for your protection. And I did, and I've never regretted it, even though, like you just said, was it ethical? I don't know. Should I have said to him, I'm recording this? I don't know. If I had, I don't think he would have done what he did. But I think what I did was expose somebody for what their business practice was really all about.
Yeah, you just said something that's quite key there, which is it would be interesting to speculate what would happen if you had said, by the way, I'm recording this conversation. The whole conversation could have gone in a completely different direction. So in this kind of case, it becomes a matter of in whose interest is it to make a big deal about the recording. I mean, obviously, in this case, you know, things came out well, and it wouldn't have been in his interest, presumably, to go after you for making that recording.
Yeah. By the way, about 6 months later, he was suspended from his professional organization, and I thought, okay, not because of this, had nothing to do with me. It was an entirely different issue. And I thought, okay, I think all I did was discover a pattern of behavior that was just...
I mean, so much of this is situational, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's even exceptions in the two-party state laws. There's usually exceptions. For example, when people think their life is can demonstrate that their life is in danger in some way. So there's those kinds of exceptions, and there's often exceptions that have to do with criminal activity.
Right. Whether you think you're being roped into some sort of criminal act, and for your own protection, you want to be able to demonstrate what you actually said, as opposed to somebody's interpretation of it.
Yeah. So you may have had, you know, if push had come to shove, you may have had a significant amount of good karma on your side if you have to explain your actions. Yeah.
I think I always got good karma because I never. I really make an effort to never lie, even when it makes me really uncomfortable to tell the truth, because that's what I hate more than anything else, would be being caught like that with somebody with a tape. We're talking with Lauren Weinstein. We're talking about recording in places where people don't even realize they may be recorded. Today's story about attorney Michael Cohen and the president just being an example of that. All right, so we're going to give you the numbers coming up, and I'll be curious to hear where you record people, where you don't think they know they're being recorded, and who you have recorded to, and other questions with Lauren next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett.